Welcome to the Oral History Review at the Oxford University Press blog. Occasionally, we like to break up the monotony of text posts with a podcast, celebrate the oral and oral history, so to speak. With these podcasts, we hope to give the Oral History Review's authors and editors a place to elaborate on or build upon their scholarship. Furthermore, as with all of our social media efforts, we aim to build awareness of the art and craft of oral history. The following podcast is hosted by Troy Reeves, the Oral History Review's managing editor and head of the Oral History Program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Enjoy.
All right, so first off, Paul, thanks for agreeing to speak with me today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
And you are the director of the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program at the University of Florida. So my first question is about the program itself, sort of the looking at it from the 1,000-foot level, if you could maybe explain to the listeners what your oral history program does.
Yes, I'm glad you asked. We were founded in 1967. Samuel Proctor was the founder of the program here at the University of Florida. Sam taught at the University of Florida for over 50 years, and he was also the university historian. And he also was one of the pioneers of the oral history movement in the 1960s and really played a critical role in the Oral History Association. One of the things that we do as a university-based oral history program is we're poised between different worlds, you know, both in the broader region, the state, the Deep South, obviously in Florida. On campus, the program does a lot of work in both digital humanities and service learning, and so we're the production unit for a lot of service learning classes on campus. One example is our Department of Spanish and Portuguese frequently conducts Spanish language service projects in the community. And we have the capacity, because of, you know, both the oral history skills we have, but also our technical expertise and staff, to help the Department of Spanish and Portuguese do those projects. You know, these involve translation, video editing, audio editing, interviewing people in the community about their experiences. The last project that we worked on with that department was a service learning class where they were interviewing recent immigrants about their experiences in Florida, in the United States, what it was like, you know, coming from Latin America, family they may have left behind, the new cultures they were trying to learn, their work experiences. So because of where we're situated, we end up doing a lot of projects of that nature. We also work with the languages program, which is also in the same building. We're located in Pugh Hall. And there we work with the Yoruban language instructor to develop training films, Yoruban language. I do not speak Yoruban, but we have, again, the technical skills and the audio and video editing. A lot of things we do in the oral history world can be translated into, you know, basic video and audio production that is very helpful for university-based professors and instructors.
So you talked a little bit about one project there one or two projects in the languages departments. What other types of projects have you embarked on?
Well, we're really, because we're a university-based program, we're really driven by the interests of our students and also our community volunteers. And we have almost 20 volunteers who work with us on our World War II and Veterans History project. And this is an open-ended oral history project. We're trying to interview as many veterans from World War II, and both people who may have served in combat, also in supply capacities, but also people that worked back in the United States, you know, Rosie the Riveter. Florida has a very high percentage of veterans. In fact, Gainesville has one of the highest percentages, or, you know, per capita of population of veterans in the country, because we have an excellent VA facility. And so that's a project where we started with World War II, and because of our volunteer interest, we really have pushed it forward, and now we're interviewing a lot of veterans of the Afghanistan and Iraq wars. And we work with local veterans organizations to arrange those interviews. And we also, like so many of our sister oral history programs across the country, work with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project. You know, we're, with the interviews that we conduct in Florida are made accessible to the Library of Congress, and that's a congressional program. One of the other projects we're very proud of is our African American history research project. We, in 2008, we really sat down and took a close look at our archive, and we have well over 5,000 oral history interviews. And we realized, to be frank with you, we had a deficit in the number of interviews with African Americans. And so we've really made it an emphasis, both in terms of offering university courses on African American history and having students in those courses go out after they're trained in basic African American history and oral history techniques to do interviews in African American neighborhoods surrounding the campus where we have very good community contacts, and also going out into Black communities, not just in Gainesville, but in different parts of North Florida, South Florida, Mississippi, other places, and working with churches and schools to train congregations or high school teachers how to do their own oral history projects in Black communities in the South. And so that's a big initiative. We've received a lot of support on campus, and obviously it really helps us bridge that town-gown divide. We're a major research university, and we're in essentially a very small deep South town, and so you know, sometimes the relationships between university and towns can get frayed, and I think our campus administration looks at the oral history program as one of those bridges to the broader community, where the communication can be two ways. You know, I tell our students and staff and volunteers that one of the things that really sets oral history apart is, and this is what we learned from Alessandro Portelli, is when we go out in the region to do research projects, we're going out to learn from people as much as we do any studying, right? It's a learning process. And so people in the surrounding community are very excited about that because they say, oh, you're not here to do a survey on us. You're here to actually listen to the wisdom that we have. So it really helps us.
I want to go all the way back to one of the first things you said in that answer. And I know here at UW-Madison, I couldn't do half of what I did without the support of volunteers. So I wonder if you wouldn't mind talking a bit more about the importance of having the good volunteers.
Oh, it's absolutely critical. I mean, our best contacts are people that we work with. I mean, one example in doing our interviews in different Latino immigrant communities, often our first contact, point of contact, is a church pastor, you know, who's working with a transitional community. You know, maybe it's predominantly from El Salvador, and so we're approached by a pastor who knows that community really intimately, and he has, you know, established trust with the members of his church. And in one case, we're currently working on a film. It's titled Siempre Adelante, or Always Moving Forward, and the idea is that the pastor of this congregation, primarily immigrants from Central America, was seeing that his members were having a lot of problems in Gainesville, in our region. You know, problems in communicating with the police, with their employers, with the city. You know, really problems having their basic needs in their neighborhood met. And so his idea was, you know, let's do an oral history project and do a film documentary. And he's going to use that in the broader region and actually show the documentary in churches, you know, civic associations, labor unions. And so it'll offer a way to communicate the experiences, you know, through first-person voices. So in that case, the volunteer situation for us is absolutely vital. It gives us links into the community. One of the fun things about the oral history program is Dean notices this quite often. He says, you know, you're the only program on the campus where people are volunteering to actually work at. And we tell them it's not anything I do. It's the excitement of the history. And so we have a core of volunteers who are actually retired faculty members. And one of our best volunteers, Ann Smith, is a retired nurse. She worked as a nurse for almost four decades, and she also was on the faculty at the UF College of Nursing. And Ann has really introduced us to new worlds of healthcare history that I didn't even know existed. I mean, one is she led us to do a series of interviews with midwives. And in Florida, midwifery was very controversial in the sense that it was not an accepted practice until fairly recently And so we have this very interesting series of interviews with people who worked as midwives, thanks to a volunteer like Ann Smith, who has those community connections. You know, she's retired. She's much wiser than I am, and she's a great advisor to the program because she has so many connections in the local community.
One more thing at least I want to ask is public programs that you do. I want you, if you wouldn't mind, talking about why it's important to present these public programs and maybe, if possible, give us a tease as to what coming the next academic year.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we see our public program series as really rooted in what we're doing with our oral history project. And we use the public programs, first of all, to encourage people to think about oral history. We've done several in African American history. In last fall of 2012, we had Larry Rivers, who's the president of Fort Valley State University, come and give a talk in his wonderful new book on slave rebellion in Florida. And we did that because we wanted to encourage people to understand the connections between both the history but also memories of struggle, of resistance in Florida, and really to introduce people to the best new scholarship in that area. We had a great turnout for the event, and a lot of people from local black churches, a lot of high school students. And we don't look at the public program as a one-time thing. We'll do podcasts, we'll produce the video and audio, and we want to put that in the hands of our school teachers in Florida, who are always approaching us for, you know, curriculum, especially in areas like World War II, African American history, immigration history. In the spring, we had Stephanie Kuntz, who is really probably the best family historian in the country, a very high-powered speaker, also parenthetically my undergraduate advisor. And Stephanie spent 2 days with us, and we had a wonderful series of community and campus dialogues about the state of the family and the state of feminism. We talked about Betty Friedan and the 50th anniversary of the feminine mystique and where the feminist movement is now. And so we use the public programs to really get dialogue going and to get people interested in doing research, you know, particularly, especially oral history projects in the areas that we feel we're strong in, like women's history, immigration history, black history, the history of race, and so on and so forth. We have a really exciting upcoming public program series for 2013-2014. We are particularly excited about our first public program, which will be on October 17th. We've been working closely with the Stetson Kennedy Foundation. Stetson Kennedy was very close with the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program. In fact, he and Sam were very good friends. Stetson, of course, was a legendary investigative reporter, a social justice activist for well over half a century. And so we're doing a program in October, which is designed to highlight the fact that the University of Florida is receiving the balance of the Stetson Kennedy papers. This is remarkable correspondence from the time back to when Stetson was working to uncover and expose the crimes of the Ku Klux Klan in the South in the 40s and the 50s, to his work with Zora Neale Hurston and the WPA project, to his work on with Operation Dixie, the CIO after World War II. So the idea behind that public program is we're going to get together a group of great panelists who are going to highlight different aspects of Stetson's work, and we're going to use that program to really broadcast the fact that we have this great set of papers now. Let's use them. Let's get students using them. Let's get community members, labor activists, immigration activists using them. In January, we have Tia Lesson, amazing Academy Award-nominated filmmaker, coming, and she's going to show a film called Trouble the Water, which is a film, one of the best documentaries on Hurricane Katrina. Tia, of course, was Michael Moore's supervising producer for many years. Some of your listeners may remember back to a great old TV show called TV Nation. And Tia's going to spend a couple of days with us both talking about how she got this amazing footage from the middle of the flooding. I mean, essentially, a lot of this is footage that survivors were taking, video footage of when the waters were rising. It's very powerful. It's provocative. By the time you finish the film, you will be in tears. I mean, it's that powerful. But we're having Tia here to do a couple of things. One is to talk about what happened in Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, what's happened since that time in terms of public policy, African American life and culture, urban politics, so on and so forth. but also getting to try to get people to think about what would it mean for me to pick up a video camera and become a filmmaker. Oral history obviously has a lot of ideas and methods that can inform really good film practice. So we're hoping to reach, you know, different audiences with that message. And then the third program, which we're planning right now, is actually a commemoration. We do a lot of commemorations here. And now we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of the St. Augustine civil rights movement. And historians talk about the importance of St. Augustine, the local struggle, the role of Dr. King, the SCLC, its importance towards the crafting of the Civil Rights Act. So we're going to get together a group of people who were there, who were activists in 1963, 1964, and we're going to do that program in the spring. And we're going to use it to highlight also the role that students and faculty at the university played in the movement. And there's going to be some tough history there, because there were students and faculty who were actually punished by the state for their involvement with the movement in 1964. We lost faculty who were fired because of their involvement. And so we're going to basically try to illuminate those histories, not to try to point fingers, but to try to say, hey, this is the price of any kind of progress. People sacrificed, let's acknowledge them, let's you know, honor them on this particular day, and let's think about using the window of opportunity we have to do oral histories on these amazing local civil rights movements. So we're not just talking about, we start with St. Augustine, but then we also try to get people to think about, hey, there's another community, there's another county that hasn't been studied. Let's get to it while we can and begin documenting these stories of local social movement.
So Dr. Paul Ortiz is a associate professor in the history department, and you're also affiliated faculty with the Center for Latin American Studies and African American Studies. And of course, you are the director of the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program at the University of Florida. Paul, again, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Troy. It was a real honor to talk with you, and I greatly appreciate the opportunity.